welcome to Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. My name's Michelle Boyce, and I've been on hiatus for the summer, enjoying the hot sun and the waves out in PEI and running boat tours and doing all that kind of fun stuff. So this is first time back here at CHRW, and I'm trying to get used to it again. You know, a couple of months not at the helm here, and, you know, they did me a favor and moved everything, and everything is so cool, so new, but so confusing. So we'll see how we pan this out here. It's been a great summer. A lot of things have been happening in the human rights stage of things. We're in the middle of a federal election, which makes things very, very interesting, especially right now in Canada, when human rights are a secondary option with our current government. So on October 19th, hopefully something can happen about that one way or another. And, you know, so today we are going to talk about, you know, this is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And this is a show more, I would think, about people's pursuit of happily ever after, being, you know, a show about Syrian refugees and, you know, the plight that they're having, trying to get to a better life here in Canada. And, you know, so we're going to talk about that. There was an amazing rally last Saturday morning at Victoria Park when a whole pile of people showed up in the pouring rain to show that refugees are welcome here in London, and we've got a bunch of stuff from that. Of course, we've got tape from all three leaders and on all of this. And, you know, unless you've been living, you know, completely and totally in under a rock, everybody has seen the horrific images all over the net of the little boy who was found dead on the beach. And, you know, to start it off and give you just an idea of what we're talking about today, thanks to CBC The National, here is a short clip of the aunt talking about that situation.
When the two boys died in his hands, in his arms, he tried to save them. He flipped when the board flipped upside down, and the wave keep pushing him down. Those two boys, they were in his arms. He said he tried all his power to put them up the water to breathe and scream, "Daddy, please, don't die." Then when he looked in his left arm with the older boy, Caleb, this one, he's already dead. So he let him go, and he said, "I will try to save the second one, Alan." He looked at him. There was the blood coming from his eyes. So he closed his eyes, and he let him go. He looked around for his wife. She was floating in the water. It's like a balloon. He said, "You should see how she looked like." He said, "I did my own, my power to save them. I couldn't. Nobody else could save them. Everyone in the boat, they tried to save their life." I told him, "I'm so sorry. I shouldn't send you the money to go. If I didn't send you the money, you won't go." And he said, "Don't blame yourself. I know you did to help us a lot." There is one thing should be done to end the war. That's all what I can say. End the war.
And that's the heartfelt interview that CBC did with the aunt who had sent the money to the family so that they could try to get to a new life and start over and try to end the misery and suffering that they suffered as a family. And you know, and then there's all of the images of on the net where they carried the bodies back to the small town that they attempted to escape from, and the father buried mom and his two boys in that war-torn country. And, you know, it's a sad situation that happened, and it's absolutely horrific. And I'm really, really happy that it has happened, and the media attention and the amount of you know, ramped up attention that has happened around the world on this issue needed to happen. And unfortunately, like the Arab Spring that was started with a gentleman lighting himself on fire on the steps of Parliament, you know, these things take dramatic actions to bring them to the attention of the seemingly, in my opinion, desensitized public who just don't feel anything anymore about humanity and other people as much as they probably, in my opinion, should. And, you know, it's television and it's media, and we've actually done a media impact show that you can watch or listen to at betweenthemargins.ca on that very subject and how it's desensitized the country and the catastrophic consequences that have happened with various individuals because of it. And, you know, it's not a new story. And, I mean, the strife there has been happening for 4 years, and it all started due to climate change. And, I mean, the Coles Notes version of the Syrian issue is that drought happened worse than California. Crops dried up. It became a dirty 30s situation, which we're all familiar with here. All of the rural people were starving to death, moved into the cities. The cities couldn't handle the flux of people. The economy and the country disintegrated into civil unrest. And then we are to the point where we are now, with that. And, you know, there's a lot of different viewpoints on what should be done around there. And I'm not going to, even attempt to chime in. I'm not from there. I have some very good trusted friends on Facebook, hi Marion, etc., who are very in the know on everything that's happening overseas and in the war-torn countries, and you know, do your research on that if you want to have an opinion. But I'm not going to go into those war or those kind of things here on this show. But I am going to give you a distinct difference between, we're in the middle of a federal election, and this is probably the hot potato federal election issue at the moment. And to start things off, I am going to play a clip from our fearless leader on his opinions of what should be happening with the refugee crisis.
As Prime Minister, I have been to refugee camps in Jordan and in Iraq. And I can tell you that I have seen tens of thousands of people in these desperate circumstances. And there are millions more in exactly the same situation. There are, in fact, tens of millions of people, not in the refugee camps, but tens of millions of people whose lives have been affected by what is going on in that part of the world in a way that is catastrophic, that has put their very survival on a day-to-day basis in jeopardy. That is the reality of the situation that we are dealing with. And it is getting worse, and getting worse in many parts of the world. We see what's happening in Iraq and Syria, but this kind of violence, the kind of violent jihadist movement we've seen there, is happening in more and more places. Our country has the most generous immigration and refugee system in the world. We admit per capita more people than any other during the lifetime of this government. We've had 2.5 million new arrivals in Canada. Many of those people, a large part of them, from where, sir? Well, it's great to have you here. There we are. A large part of the people who come are people who are coming for reasons of family reunification, for humanitarian and compassionate grounds. And, of course, refugee situations as well. And earlier in this campaign, I announced that this government, we have already accepted tens of thousands of refugees from this part of the world, from the Middle East, and I announced earlier in the campaign that we will accept more. But, friends, refugee policy alone is not remotely a solution to this problem. It is of a scale far, far beyond that. That's why we have been one of the largest donors of humanitarian aid of any country relative to our size in this part of the world. And I know that that has been appreciated by many of the people I did visit when I was there. And yes, we are also doing what we have to do to try and fight the root cause of this problem. And that is the violent campaign being led against people, against millions of people, by ISIS. That is why we are part of the International Military Coalition. A few days...
And that gives you an idea of what Harper is saying in regards to this crisis and in regards to everything that's happening. And I mean, there's a couple of things there. First off, it's utter crap, utter bullshit, and it's total lies. I mean, and here's London lawyer Ed Corrigan, who took the stage this weekend to debunk some of these lies that Harper just told Canadians, in that we are not number one, we are number 41. I guess digit math is difficult for him. He only heard the one part. But we are 41st in the world, not the first country, and we are by far not the leader. I mean, some of the numbers that I've been hearing while researching this show, ballpark figures, 3,000 people have died in the Mediterranean Sea. There's over 800,000 sitting in refugee camps around the world from Syria alone. Other countries have taken in more than a quarter of their population in Syrian refugees, trying to bolster their economy and attempting to bring more population into their countries. And, you know, it's a win-win for both sides, for them, and also, you know, doing the humanitarian bet. And we've got a former Chief Justice Louise Armar on the show later talking about some of those stuff. So this is Ed Corrigan. He's an immigration lawyer here in London, and here's his thoughts.
It's from Ed Corrigan, the immigration and refugee lawyer here in London.
There's a lot of things going on, and unfortunately, they're all interconnected. Pope Francis said something very interesting recently, saying that wars go on because too many people profit from wars. And I think what he said is true. And when we listen to sort of the words from our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, we have to recognize that many of those words are in fact lies. You know, the economy is doing great. We're leading the world in terms of refugees, which in fact is totally, totally wrong. And in fact, it's a lie. And I would even submit that he knows that it's a lie. He just thinks that the Canadian public and Canadian media are very gullible. As Tina said, Canada is actually 41st in the world in terms of its support for refugees. And that's appalling. We're one of the richest countries in the world, yet our response is pathetic and, in fact, motivated by xenophobia, racism, and a total lack of concern. And many of these people claim to be right-wing Christians, but they are totally unchristian in their attitudes towards people who need help and need our help. Now, Pope Francis has asked every single parish in Europe to take one family in and sponsor them. I think that is an excellent model. Germany is talking about taking 800,000 refugees this year. 25% of the population of Lebanon right now are refugees. And the actions and response from the Canadian government is beyond pathetic. Right now, Canada, this past year, we've taken 2,374 refugees into this country, which is really not even a drop in the sea of the ocean. We also have only taken 9 Syrian refugees as private-sponsored refugees. This is, again, beyond appalling. The NDP, the Liberals, and I'm sure the Green Party have also said that we have to take a much bigger stance. We have to bring in people, you know, 10, 25,000 people on an urgent basis. Don't need to make them wait for 3 or 4 years or 10 years in a refugee camp under horrible conditions. There are governments in Canada that are taking action. The governor of Nova Scotia, other provinces are putting money in to help look after the refugees in the camps, to help the countries that are bearing the overwhelming majority of the burden. But you have to think, what would drive somebody to, you know, to take a very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean Sea or to walk across the desert to get their family, their children, to a place of safety. Okay, over 2,000 people, nearly 3,000 people, have drowned in the Mediterranean trying to escape the horror that is existing in the Middle East. But the real sad part of this is the West is very culpable. We have intervened, we have bombed, we have supported, we have tried to create and arm Islamic Salafists and created the Islamic State. We've destroyed Afghanistan, we've destroyed Iraq, we've destroyed Libya, we have now destroyed, of course, Syria, and I've read stuff saying that Lebanon is next on the list to be destroyed. And Naomi Klein wrote a book about disaster capitalism. You create a disaster, you create chaos, and out of that, then they need you. You can make a whole pile of money. We do not need to be spending money on war materials. We do not need to spend money destroying countries so we can make some money building them up. We should many other ways that are much more profitable and better for humanity and better for ourselves, quite frankly. We don't need to have a small group of people profiting from war, creating wars, and destabilizing governments. Now, with this government, they're heartless. They don't like people of color. They don't like Arabs. I don't think they like Muslims. They don't like anybody who's supportive of the Palestinians. And as a result, they're turning not only a deaf ear, they're contributing majorly to the problem. And we can do something on October the 19th. We can vote this government out of office and take some stand. I urge you to do that. Thank you again.
And that's legal expert Ed Corrigan talking about some of those lies that Mr. Harper seems to think that, you know, he's never going to be fact-checked. And I don't get that out of politicians. I really, really, really don't get that. I mean, when you make blatant statements over and over again, it doesn't matter how many times you say them, they're still not true. And oh, it just drives me nuts. It's like we need, I don't really care what politics you play. I don't care what team you play for. And you know, I get really, really annoyed at people that think politics is a sports team. And, you know, you've always been a Leafs fan, so you're always going to be a Leafs fan. And it doesn't matter what happens, you're going to be a Leafs fan. This is not politics. Politics is supposed to be an intellectual game where you actually think and engage in whoever it is that is a leader and your constituent riding person, candidate that's running in your riding, and you're supposed to engage them in a conversation and actually choose who you feel is going to be the best for the country, not because you've always rooted for the Leafs. Just a little sidebar there. Anyways, politics and me, and I haven't had a mic in a couple of months, people, so give me a break. So, you know, maybe I'll be a little bit more aggressive than I usually am. Although I did get told I'm a bulldog the other day, and you may agree with that or not, and I prefer people to say they like my laugh, so it's just, I prefer to laugh than to be a bulldog, but, you know, everything to each their own. There's, you know, a few other professional opinions that I have about Harper's particular opinions. But, you know, we keep talking about this little boy that died on the beaches, etc. And one individual that came to the rally was 9-year-old little Marley from Lord Nelson Public School. And her mom brought her and I think that she was a very intelligent young woman. She owned me in this interview. I don't think I played it. It was further on. But I said, so what did you think of the little boy that died? And she said, wasn't there two little boys? And that told me that this little girl is more politically engaged than half of our country. And here's her interview.
Marley? And Marley, why are you here?
Because my mommy thinks that the Harper government is being mean, not letting other people come in because of war. And sometimes on the way they come, when they want to come, they drown because our countries, most of the countries won't let them in, including Canada, because the Harper government only wants rich people and, like, people like that to come in to Canada.
Wonderful opinion.
And there you have it, from 9-year-old Marley owning us and the rest of us. I always say that kids get human rights. They're born with a compass that points due north. And, you know, some of the times I think when I was a little girl around 9 years old, I stopped listening to the media and I put myself in a bubble and I stayed there until I was like 30 years old. And it was a period of time in my life where I just wasn't subjected to media. I didn't watch a lot of TV. I wasn't focusing on any of the issues. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm still true to human rights, is because I still have that 5-year-old concept of right and wrong. You know, as our experiences hit, as we profit from various situations, as our parents tell us things like 9-year-old Marley, everything becomes more convoluted. And I always say, if you want to know the difference between right and wrong, ask a little kid, because they're going to be able to tell you without a doubt the correct answer. The other thing that is the issue with this unfolding case is Harper's insistent that war, more bombing, more war, more destruction, more protecting us from the invisible terrorists that, you know, the monster under Harper's bed. More war, whereas the rest of the international community is saying less war, no war, then the answers for Syria do not involve bombs. They involve people in humanitarian. And one of the people that has switched his is one of Harper's allies, David Cameron from the UK. And here's a recent quote from him when he went full circle from the bomb. And here it is.
We have taken a number of genuine asylum seekers from Syrian refugee camps, and we keep that under review. But we think the most important thing is to try to bring peace and stability to that part of the world. I don't think there is an answer that can be achieved simply by taking more and more refugees.
So there you go. So David Cameron says that this is not the way things should be. So, you know, it's fascinating that Harper seems to be in isolation when it comes to these issues. And you know, one of the people that I very, very much appreciate her opinion is Louise Arbour, who used to be the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, and she also used to be the Chief Justice of the Canadian Supreme Court. And I listened to an interview with her, and one of the things that she said was that Harper has it all wrong, and the last thing that we should be looking at as a solution to this crisis is a military solution. We should be looking at a non-military solution for this. And you know, it's fascinating that all of the professionals are saying the same thing, and that is that you know, Harper really has to tone down his rhetoric and be more involved in the humanitarian side of things than what he is currently practicing. Harper has promised 10,000 people over the next 4 years, and that's all refugees, not just those from the Syria crisis. And remember, there's 800,000 Syrians sitting in refugee camps right now that have been there for years and years. So this is not an acceptable answer from Harper. And I mean, the provincial hands are tied. The municipal hands are tied. The bottleneck is at the federal government, and we've got some people talking about that later on. about how difficult it is to get these refugees into Canada. To give you an example, there are various organizations. I mean, the premier of PEI has been quoted to say that that the refugee crisis cannot be dealt with in Canada until the election happens. The provincial premiers are recognizing that the bottleneck is in the federal government. Everybody recognizes that, that the federal government is currently the bottleneck in this situation. So to give you an idea of Canada's refugee history, here is a short clip that itemizes, you know, what we have done in the past when it comes to refugees.
Since the end of the Second World War, Canada has taken in more than 1.2 million refugees through various programs. Take a look at some of them. In 1956, Soviet forces moved into Hungary to crush an uprising. More than 200,000 people fled the country. The federal government implemented a special program offering the refugees free transport to Canada. And so more than 37,000 Hungarians came on some 200 specially chartered planes over the next year. In 1968, Soviet-led troops invaded Czechoslovakia during the Prague Spring. Over the next year, 11,000 Czech refugees came to this country. In 1972, Idi Amin ordered anyone of Asian heritage to leave Uganda. He gave them 90 days to get out. Canada took in 7,000 people after setting up a special office in the region. That is more than any other country except for Britain. Again, on that occasion, many of the refugees came on planes chartered by the government. 3 years later, in 1975, the communist victory in Vietnam forced about 2 million people to flee their homes, many by boat. They ended up in refugee camps in Southeast Asia, creating an international humanitarian crisis by the late 70s. Canada then took in more than 65,000 refugees. In the 1990s, the breakup of the former Yugoslavia led to several refugee crises, the first in the early 90s. Bosnian Muslims were fleeing ethnic cleansing. Canada admitted 5,000 people. In 1999, almost 6,000 came on special charters from Kosovo. More recently, though, Canada has taken in more than 14,000 refugees from Colombia over the past decade who are fleeing a civil war in that country.
So Canada has a very strong reputation prior to Harper's Canada that, I mean, we were the peacekeepers. We were the people that came and helped other countries. We were the ones that restored rest to and peace to countries. We were the ones that negotiated and mitigated and mediated and put our lives on the line for peace. And that is what Canada, at least my Canada, that is what my Canada is all about. I mean, that is why I used to, you know, have all of my friends, I never did it, my daughter's done it, you know, they'd go backpack Europe and they'd always put a great big huge Canada flag on their backpack because they were proud of Canada and so was the rest of the world. Now there's, you know, there's an attack ad on Harper that was created by a third party and look that up on the internet if you want to see it, but there's an actual incident where someone told a Canadian tourist that you used to be one of the good ones and spit on them. That is what has happened to our international reputation. People are spitting on us on the world stage, and it needs to change. So in keeping with this is an election time, and we need to give equal airtime to all of the other parties, here are the three other leaders, Mulcair, Trudeau, and Elizabeth May, leading this up with their opinions on what Canada should do before the break.
Those horrors are the direct result of the last misguided war, and that's why the NDP doesn't think that more bombing and more war is the solution. But we do think that Canada should start acting. The UN has given us a request to take in 10,000 Syrian refugees. There's no reason for us not to do that. And when I hear the answers from the Prime Minister saying, well, you know, it's more war is what the solution, No amount of military action would have saved that child on that beach yesterday. So let's start acting to save lives immediately. Canada's done it in the past, and we can do it again.
It's very clear that what is needed in this case is for leadership in our country that stands up and says, we want to start accepting tens of thousands of refugees in an immediate way. The government has made commitments, but as we've seen over the past few years, it has been slow to achieve even the very modest targets that they have set. We need to do more. Canadians want us to do more. Other countries are doing it. Canada should not be a laggard in this. We have built this extraordinary country on welcoming people wanting to build a better life for themselves and their families here than they could have anywhere else. And that's exactly what we need to continue to do again.
Over and over again in the House of Commons, opposition members have challenged the Minister of Immigration, Chris Alexander, to explain how they can promise to bring 10,000 refugees to Canada. Where are they? It's been a long time since the promise was made, and very few refugees have been accepted. And if you want to know why, go to the Immigration Canada website and try to imagine how you could sponsor a refugee. Look at the rules they've put in place now. This is not what happened when Canada went to welcome the people from Vietnam. The rules that are in place now make it almost impossible to bring a Syrian refugee to Canada, and you have to have enormous means, you have to jump through a lot of hoops, and the government-sponsored refugees are simply, they're not moving on.
Thanks to Canadian Press for that clip, and we'll be right back with Between the Margins after these short break. And welcome back to Between the Margins. My name is Michelle Boyce, and you are listening to a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. The current show is, I would think, well, it is very much human rights, but it is also very much people's pursuit of happily ever after. And over the weekend, there were rallies that happened all across Canada, with Idle No More and No Borders and all of a whole pile of other church, religious, synagogues, etc., participating in various rallies to send the message loud and clear that regardless of what Harper says, Canada is open and welcome to refugees, and we need to do our world part. Canada is all about being a compassionate country. And I mean, people need to understand, refugees is a very, very small number of people that are admitted to Canada every single year. Only 10% of immigrants that are brought into Canada come under the refugee class. The other 90% of people come in under all of the various other ways that the government sets up to handle immigration into this country. So it is an extremely small number of people. If you go on the web to www.betweenthemargins.ca, there's a show about 5 years ago where we did the immigration system and we broke down those numbers. And if you want to know how Canada actually admits immigrants, then take a look. But we're basically looking at the population of St. Thomas brought in, spread across the entire country every single year in refugees. It's a very small number of people that we're talking about. And what it means to those people, and, you know, we have an interview in a little while with a gentleman who came across the Mediterranean on a boat 40 years ago, who is now a dentist. He is an imam at one of the synagogues. He is a spiritual leader. He's a leader in this country. He has also paid probably millions of dollars in taxes through the years in this country. So just because someone comes in with nothing but their shirt on the back doesn't mean that they're not going to be a successful and supportive person to this country. And I caught up with Ed Corrigan after his time on stage this weekend, and here's a few more of his comments. Tell me your position and what you're doing here at the rally.
I'm an immigration refugee lawyer, and I've been a refugee and immigration lawyer for over 23 years, and I'm the only certified specialist by the Law Society of Upper Canada in citizenship and immigration, and immigration and refugees. So I've represented a lot of refugees from Palestine, refugees from Syria, from Iraq, from Afghanistan, from Libya, other places. So I have a lot of firsthand experience, and over the last 20 years I've helped probably a few thousand refugees come to this country.
Wonderful. I did an interview with Gidi Mano, another immigration lawyer, about 5 years ago, where he told us that refugees worked out to about 10% of the immigrants that come to this country, about ballpark. How does that compare now?
Well, I would say that, you know, those numbers are still pretty accurate, because unfortunately for the world, there are a lot of places that are terrible and people are still getting accepted as refugees. But the government, if they want to do something, they can put some more money in and bring in government-sponsored refugees from refugee camps. So people, we know they're refugees, have been recognized in UNHCR. They've been there for years. There are women, there are children, there are orphans. There's a lot of people that, you know, with a little bit of support from Canada, they could become great Canadians and make a significant contribution. But just like, Dr. Munir Al-Qassem, he came here as a refugee. He was a professor at the university. He's a dentist. He's heavily involved in this community. And he's probably, he's making a great income and probably paid millions of dollars worth of taxes to the government, okay? You know, should we turn, close, slam the door in the face of people like that? Albert Einstein was a refugee, okay? We had the person who was Papandreou, was a refugee from Greece. He taught at the university. Then, because he got the protection of Canada, when he went back to Greece, he was the prime minister of the country, okay? And I'm sure he remembered very fondly that Canada gave him protection when he desperately needed it.
What can we do?
I would first of all encourage people to make a donation to their church or their mosque or their synagogue and get a tax credit for it, a charitable tax credit for it, so that it helps people bring people to the country. I also would encourage people, one, to vote, and two, take their checkbooks and write a check for $100 to their political party or candidate of their choice. It only costs them $25, and that would send a very, very powerful message, and it would create an earthquake that would change the political situation in this country.
And there is some very sound political advice for anyone that wants to do something and get involved. I know the rally that happened in Victoria Park. I mean, what was really resounding about that rally was not so much who was there, but who was not there. And who was not there is there was not a single liberal or conservative candidate in attendance at the welcome rally this weekend in London. Every single NDP candidate and every single Green Party candidate was in attendance at the rally. And if this issue means something to you, then that should probably also mean something to you. And two of those people, on the other person that was there was Mo Salih, and he's a Ward 3 councillor from the city. I think I got that right this time. I always get them confused, as you'll hear here, but this is Mo.
Mo Salih.
And you are the councillor for Ward 4?
Ward 3.
Ward 3.
Ward 4 is behind me.
All right. I always get them confused.
No worries.
So what brings you here today, Mo?
No, it's just a great opportunity to meet people in the community and hear how they feel about this important issue, and to really come show my support for, all the refugees in the world, in particular, the recent surge of refugees in the Middle East and all the things that are happening over there, and, to show support and solidarity with everyone who's suffering and wanting to have the opportunity to come to the greatest country on earth, Canada.
Great. And I know council has made some statements that are very positive about bringing people to London. What are the roadblocks?
you know, I think, you know, there, it's a matter of making sure that everyone involved, all levels of government, are doing their part and playing their part and working together to make sure that we can continue to be the most open country and continue to be that welcoming Canada, and, you know, to be very supportive of folks in our community and to be supportive of folks over there that need our help.
Great. Thanks for all you do, Mo.
No problem. Thank you so much.
And that's Mo, who's probably, in my opinion, the most engaged politician in the City of London. He is everywhere, always, and you know, he seems to care. And I love you to pieces, Mo. You know, if you catch Mo on Facebook, he's always answering your questions on Facebook. He's always engaging the public. He has the best response time of any counselor on Facebook. It's absolutely amazing what this guy has done. Whether you like his politics or don't like his politics, you have to love how much he is engaged in the City of London. And here is another individual that was at the rally this weekend. Irene Matheson has been the mother of London for as long as I can remember. She is a rock. She is always there. She's always fighting for everybody. And you know, I just love her energy and her enthusiasm as well. And she's another person that you will always see out at events and in the community. She never hides from the hard issues, and she's always there to fight for the little guy. And this is Irene Matheson.
I'm talking to Irene Matheson, who is running again for how many terms now?
This will be the fourth
term in London Fanshawe.
London Fanshawe, yes.
And what brings you out here today?
Well, this is a community that needs the support of all Canadians, and this is a community that has suffered dreadfully because of the government that we have in place. I'm here to say that we have to stand together for human rights, to end suffering, and as Canadians to say we want the Canada back that welcomed people who needed to be here. We want the Canada back that offered safety to refugees and immigrants, and I want that Canada to be the Canada that we see after the next election.
And that's Irene Matheson, who was there. And I tried to catch up with the other candidates, but the crowd dispersed so fast after the thing. I apologize. I wanted to get you all on the air, but, you know, check out all of your Green and NDP candidates if this is an issue that is important to you, because every single one of them was there at the rally this weekend. So people ask what we can do, and you know, a group of individuals here at Western, led by Rob Staton, are trying to do that, and they are hitting immense roadblocks on this issue. And here's Rob Staton talking about what he's attempting to do.
I'm Rob Stainton, and I'm a professor in the Department of Philosophy and in the Linguistics program at Western.
You were talking about some of the stuff that's happening in London and some of the programs that you've put together. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So an informal group of us, about a dozen now in London and elsewhere, have begun to find out about how to sponsor families. We became impatient with how little the politicians in Ottawa, in all parties, had been doing to make this a crucial central issue, and so we thought we would try and do something ourselves. And I began to look into the various routes for sponsoring families on behalf of this sort of dozen or so folks, most of whom are at University of Western Ontario. And it turns out that it's very difficult to sponsor refugees, and that there's a massive bottleneck caused in part by a lack of resources that the federal government has put forward. But what I did find was other like-minded groups who were trying to do the same thing, partly in, you know, the media attention brought by the tragic death of the Kurdi family meant that more and more people were getting interested. And so I got in touch with Reverend Jeff Crittenden at the Metropolitan United Church, he, in his turn, had been in touch with the mayor's office and with London's two mosques, and we're all now collaboratively working to bring 10 or so families to London over the next couple of years.
Can you talk about those roadblocks?
Yes. Well, on the one hand, there's roadblocks just in terms of getting the information. It turned out to be a lot of research, which I'm still doing, about what the process is, what paperwork needs to be done. And I was appalled at how hard it was to find out. You know, when people want to help, it should be easy for them to do so. When, for instance, they want to subsidize refugees, because that's what the program is, when they want to subsidize refugees to come to the country, you would have thought that the government would have the information right at hand for how to do it and have contact people that you could get in touch with. None of that is true. So that's one obstacle, just getting the information. The other obstacle is that the paperwork, the red tape that one of the speakers mentioned, really is very, very onerous. And the final obstacle is that because there hasn't been enough resources devoted to it, there aren't actually refugee families available to sponsor right now. So even if today we had $250,000 and said to the feds, we want to bring 10 families here, there aren't 10 families that we can bring. And so that bottleneck overseas, which involves the United Nations High Commission of Refugees and the visa offices overseas, they have to get working to process the refugee families so that we can bring them to Canada.
So what you're telling me is there's all these people that need to come to Canada. There's all these people that want to bring people to Canada. And the main story that has broken is the fact that it's virtually impossible to do so.
Virtually impossible is too strong, but let me tell you this. There are presently 156 people who are registered under what's called the blended visa office referral program. All of them already have sponsors. So 156 means it's not virtually impossible, but it means that it's very difficult, and it should be much, much easier.
I'm assuming you're an intelligent gentleman. I'm assuming that you can read perfect English.
Yes.
I'm assuming that you're very familiar with our government system. What does that say about someone without the faculties that
you
have available?
That's a fantastic question. If it's so hard for me, then that shows that this is a massive problem. This should be very easy, not just for ordinary Canadians who want to help, but also for people who are overseas who need the help. And instead, I've had to recur to the expertise of lawyers and refugee specialists to try to understand what the process is, and I still don't really get it.
And that is the problem. I mean, there are so many roadblocks that the government have put into place that it is absolutely atrocious that people cannot possibly figure out this system, and people can't. I mean, it's just impossible. In research terms, we call it bureaucratic burden, and the more bureaucratic burden you put in people's way, the less chances that people are going to engage the process. And here is a gentleman who himself was floating in the Mediterranean 40 years ago. Dr. Cusack is an Iman here in London, and he took the stage in a very passionate plea about refugees.
Dr. Munir Al-Qasim.
May the peace, mercy, and blessings of God be with all of you. Before I say anything, please allow me to get something off my chest. I can't keep it for later. We all heard Stephen Harper making a statement. He said if he is re-elected, he will help to admit 10,000 Syrian refugees. I want to send a message from here. We definitely want to readmit the 10,000 Syrian refugees, but we do not want to have Harper re-elected. Now, there has been fear-mongering trying to describe refugees as people who do not fit in our society, in our communities, among us. people who may be dangerous to our stability. And because of this, I have a surprise for you. I asked one of those boat people, because we all know that refugees start their journey taking a boat into the unknown. And we know that many of them drowned. And we've seen some images. Because of this, I have asked one of those boat people to come and attend with us. So please look around you and see if you can find who that boat person is. Believe me, there is one boat person who has come to attend with us. I'll give you a few moments to see if you can discover that boat person. Look around you. Well, you're right, my friend. I'm going to say that you are looking at this boat person. 39 years ago, July 19th, 1976, I was on board a little boat in the Mediterranean on a stormy night, and we lost a couple of people who were with us, and we were drenched with the rain and the water of the sea, that finally we made it to Cyprus. And for those who are afraid that refugees are going to drain our resources, let me say to all of those people who know me, I did not drain the resources of my community, but for the last 40 years, I've been helping to build a Canada that will welcome people, a Canada that is an icon of peace, not a Canada that makes refugees instead of welcoming refugees. How can we stand within the international community and speak that we do care about refugees when we've been helping to make refugees all over the world? And in the poem that Nusayba read, she basically moved us beyond any limits. I'm sure everyone who listened would agree with me, because we've been making refugees all over the world. But this is coming to an end on October 19th, a decade where refugees have been made all over the world will be replaced with decades. Please look at my lips. I said decades of bringing back Canada to the Canada that I saw when I arrived in London, Ontario, to find a peace-loving community that I helped to see many others who are all around us. Now, I would like to share with you, this afternoon at the London Muslim Mosque, I mentioned in my sermon something that I would like all of us to think about, and think deeply about it. The refugee problem is not a formula. It is an equation, which means that there are two sides on the equal sign. On one side, there are the refugees who are suffering all over the world, and on the other side of the equal sign is us. And unless we help to balance the equation, this equation will never be solved. We've got to do our share to balance and to help the other side of the equal sign to be balanced and to come to Canada the same as I've been here for the last 40 years, enjoying this beautiful country. They deserve the same thing. Among them are people who may actually, at this very time, be the future we are waiting for, to build a better Canada, an inclusive Canada, a Canada that is made of all of those beautiful people we started with and we moved to here, so that we will enjoy what is left of humanity, and I will say it is Canada that is the only hope to resurrect humanity to the way that it's supposed to be. My friends, the future belongs to us, the people who are peace-loving, who make peace and welcome peace when we fare this weather and we come together as a nucleus for a future Canada. We want to send a message for those people on the railway tracks who are just walking. Maybe they do not know where they will arrive. We want to make sure that they will arrive at our borders with welcoming arms, with people who will open their homes to receive them and share whatever we have with them. And may God make it easy for all of us. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for spreading the message, and may God bless you all.
And how is that for a powerful speech? And this has been Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. I'm Michelle Boyce. I'm going to leave you with just a little bit of poetry here I can't play the whole thing, but just to give you an idea of some of that the guests have been referring to. This is, a tribute to 9/11, because that is when this happened, or the thing happened on 9/11. My name is Michelle Boyce, and I hope you have your happily ever after, whatever that means to you.